You're listening to Red Nation Online.
Now we can make that difference. A lot of great work.
This is the Gaffer and Hooligan Podcast. Discussions, debates, and opinions on Major League Soccer and the CONCACAF region from a Canadian perspective. Hosted by Kamal Hilton.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Gaffer and Hooligan, Red Nation Online's virtual soccer pub discussing all things MLS and CONCACAF from a Canadian perspective. I am your host, Kamal Hilton, and I'm joined by one of my RNO colleagues, Aaron Nielsen. He's our resident statistician and analytics expert. How's it going, Aaron?
Very good, Kamal.
And today we're going to continue our World Cup coverage. The last podcast we did with Andres Torres covered CONCACAF and CONMEBOL. And this week we're going to cover Africa and Asia, the CAF region for Africa, which includes Cameroon, Ivory Coast, Nigeria, Ghana, and Algeria. And the AFC region includes Australia, Japan, Iran, and South Korea.
We're exploring my African and Asian roots. Irish, by the way. But
yeah, and in this podcast, just like the last one, we're just going to go over, you know, group expectations, the group situation, and just a quick overview of each team. So let's start off with Group A and Cameroon. The African teams. Cameroon is in Group A with Brazil, Croatia, and Mexico. So Aaron, looking at their squad and looking at their situation, what are your thoughts on them initially?
I think the thing that sticks out about Cameroon this year, especially historically with the World Cup, with the Roger Milla story, is realistically it's probably Samuel Eto'o's last major tournament. And he already has 110 games and 55 goals with Cameroon, you know, with Chelsea and Barcelona and every big team in Europe. So it's basically his swan song. And so to be honest with you, looking at their whole roster, I think they have some issues, especially in defense and goalkeeping. So I don't expect much from them this tournament. I think they're a weaker team than... And one of the issues is in the past, in 1990 and stuff like that, when they sort of surprised other teams. People were unfamiliar with them. And one of the things about modern-day soccer is a lot of these players for both of these continents now play in Europe and stuff. So there's a great familiarity with these players. So they're, in terms of analytics and statistics, their opponents can actually understand what they expect from them and play against them, opposed to being a total unknown, which was the case in the previous tournaments. They have some interesting players. One thing that will be talked about a lot in this podcast is the emphasis on the Bundesliga. Cameroon has some decent players in the Bundesliga, mostly Joe Molcha, who's a 22-year-old defensive midfielder, is a huge prospect in world soccer, and Chubo Montong, who is a forward who scored double-digit goals. He's with the FSV Mainz, which is a small team and a familiar team because they have a lot of Koreans and Japanese players on them as well. I think for the Africans, and again, this will be an ongoing theme, it does give them an opportunity. If they showcase themselves in this tournament, they can get a bigger opportunity in Europe. So, you know, it gives them a reason to excel.
It's interesting that you think their main issue will be defensive struggles, because I actually think their main issue would be scoring goals. I look at outside of Samuel Eto'o, there's no one really there. You mentioned a few players, but there's no one really. Their best players, in my mind, outside of Samuel Eto'o, are all defensive-minded. You have Alex Song,
yeah,
who, by the way, should never have left Arsenal. I'm just going to throw that out there.
Yeah, I buried.
They have Landry Nguemo, yeah, who plays for Bordeaux. He also played for Nancy. He had a small spell at Celtic. And Nicolas Nkulu, who plays center back for Marseille.
Okay.
He's very promising. I think Milan and a couple other teams were interested in him. Well, all those guys are all defensive minded. So.
Yeah, well, again, and if you look at the defensive midfield, you also have Jean McCoon, who played throughout France and Europe and stuff like that. I think the biggest question mark in a lot of these African teams is their goaltending, number one, and in terms of defense, how they stay as a unit in defense, right? So, and again, you know, maybe I am grabbing onto old stereotypes where African teams are very athletic, but formation and tactic-wise, they might be a little bit lacking. But, you know, for me, in terms of my work, you know, I look at prospects, I look at player evaluations, and although the names you mentioned do have significant value in soccer, you know, Samuel Eto'o is by far their biggest name, and they also have this guy, Aboukor, who's in third in scoring in France right now, and he just came on the scene, like, he never hardly had any goals before this season, but he's 14 and third in Liga in scoring this season. But I take your point. I think it's very valid.
What are your expectations of them in relation to the rest of the group?
Yeah, I haven't personally. And I know that I think in your last podcast, you want to go with predictions, probably in a later podcast and stuff like that. I haven't really analyzed matchups and stuff like that. I just look at the overall quality of the team. And personally, when I was just doing my quick, you know, analyzing, trying to project what the results would be, I do see them struggling. So I don't see, you know, I don't know how they will match up with certain teams in the division.
So put another way then, do you see them having issues with the passing of Croatia, Brazil, and Mexico? Those all seem to be more possession-style teams.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting because a lot of the Cameroon players play in France, and France is mostly a possession-based league, especially with the non-big clubs. So, you know, there's going to be accustomed to that. But, yeah, I think, you know, be interesting in that group because I think all the other teams, as you mentioned, play a similar style. So the only, you know, I guess if you're a fan of Cameroon, the bright spot they have is because they're probably going to be a bit different than the other teams. They might be able to make some upsets and succeed in that notion.
So let's move on to another African team in Group C. You have Ivory Coast. They're grouped with Japan, Greece, and Colombia. And as I mentioned in the last podcast, this seems like the most balanced group of the bunch. Yeah. For me, I want to make a point that this is not just Didier Drogba. I've seen a lot of other podcasts and a lot of other other places. They mention Didier Drogba, and that's about it. And, like, they're fixated on him. But they do have, in my mind, one of the top 10 best midfielders in Europe right now, in Yaya Touré. And if you even look at their other forwards, you have Sedou Doumbia, who's, although he's in Russia... I think, I don't really know why he's in Russia. He should be.
I think they paid 20 million pounds for him.
That's true. It would be the money. But I mean, he should be in a bigger league. He's quality enough to be in a bigger league. You have Wilfred Bony. I really like him. He plays for Swansea.
Yeah.
He was their big signing.
And he scored 34 goals in Eredivisie the season before. So.
Yeah, he's really quality. And you have Gervinho. And I know. You know, Arsenal fans, and we didn't really get the best of him because when he was at Lille, he was blowing it up. And after he's left, he's gone to Roma and he's done really well.
Yeah.
So that's pretty much the point I have on them.
Well, the other thing, just to add to that, they also have Kalou, who from Chelsea fame, who's still scoring a lot of goals in Europe right now. And they also have a guy who's on loan at Everton right now who played in Russia and played in Monaco in France, Lucina Touré, who's 6'9". Right, so if you want to change a game, that's the way you change a game. You know, my biggest question with Ivory Coast going into this tournament, especially, and again, you know, I'll say defense and goaltending, but the issue to me is, and another one of the, you know, like Group of Death, this is the second biggest cliche of the World Cup, is the golden generation, right? And a lot of the midfield and a lot of the defense, and even, you know, Drogba and Touré themselves are in their late or early 30s in that 30 range. So reality is you know, one could argue that they built themselves up for this tournament, but the other issue is they could be that sort of put too much pressure on themselves, right? Because the unfortunate thing, I think, is Ivory Coast will struggle in future World Cups and stuff like that to get this group of players that they have in this tournament. without giving predictions and stuff like that, I do think they're the African team with the most hope, or the non-South American European team with the most hope. And unfortunately, you know, not unfortunately, but in terms of the Drogba comment, you know, if they are to succeed, I think the emphasis is going to be put on him, and this notion that he is a big-time player and gets up for the big occasions and things like that. And, you know, as we go, you know, we're going to go into Ghana probably next or soon. You know, it was almost like Yen in the last tournament, right? You still need that sort of, and maybe Torre's that guy, right? Torre's certainly done it with Man City this year, scored a crazy amount of goals. So maybe he can be the guy that stands out in the tournament.
Yeah, I think we should move quickly on to the next team. That is Nigeria in Group F. They are grouped with Argentina, Bosnia, and Iran. And I actually think, not to give out an official prediction, but I think they would have liked this group once they saw how it shakes out. Because sure. I think everybody, it's safe to say that Argentina will finish top, but I think they see themselves as a very favorable candidate to come out of that group with Argentina.
Yeah, no, I would agree with that. And to counter my point earlier, the thing I like about Nigeria is, number one, they do have a strong keeper in Aminia, who basically, you know, came out of nowhere, was one of the top keepers in Israel. He's the interesting story about him is he's actually a penalty kick taker as well as a keeper. So he had like 10 goals in the season in the Israel Premier League. But now is a starting keeper in Lille in France, has 20 clean sheets in like 30 games, and so is one of the top keepers in that league. To your Eastern European Russian football knowledge, two players that I like to look out for, younger players, is Amin Musa, who plays for Kaska. He's a winger, a highly regarded prospect. And I don't know if he'll make the tournament, but, you know, talking about Torre, 6'8", and stuff like that, there's a guy named Brown Adai, who used to play in France, plays in Dynamo Kiev now, is a complete machine, right? And will bother any defense. So again, we'll go deeper into this in future podcasts, but the weather and things like that. I think the one benefit to the African teams is if they use their athleticism, you know, because I think some teams might be conservative because of the warm weather, because of other things, so they might try to slow the game down. So if these guys are fighting and aggressive, it could give them a great advantage.
Another player that I'm kind of fond of is Emmanuel Emenike,
plays Russia.
Fenerbahce.
Yeah, he used to play in Russia.
But the other point I want to make is Coach Stephen Keshi.
Okay.
He helped them to the African Cup of Nations title, the most recent one against Burkina Faso.
Yeah.
He is probably the most high-profile African coach that's out there right now. And I think if he has a good tournament, he could see himself in... If he wants to give up international football, he could see himself in a middle-profile European league, which is a big step for black coaches in general.
Sure, and just to put emphasis on their CAF tournament win, you know, going into that tournament, they weren't the favorites, right? And realistically, most of the African countries going into the World Cup are not the favorites. So I think as a team unity, they might understand what it took to get them to win the CAF tournament and use that knowledge and to benefit themselves in this tournament.
The other point I'd want to make is for Toronto FC fans, it's kind of a shame
that
Bright DK won't be able to go. I think he would have added some impact sub. He'd been a good impact substitute for them maybe if he made the tournament.
Yeah.
I think he would have been useful. Another team that we're going to move on to, this has been dubbed the group of death. You have Ghana in group G, and they're grouped with Germany, Portugal, and the United States. The one point I really want to make about them to start off is how strong their midfield is.
Yeah, to be honest with you, and I'll let you continue, but my notion was to dismiss Ghana going into this. I knew that, as I said, the last tournament was supposed to be the tournament that they're supposed to challenge and things like that. And, you know, I know Ghana has a very strong soccer program, mostly at the youth level. And so, I was willing to dismiss them. And then I started going through their list of players. And you can't do that, right? I think they have a lot of quality players throughout the team.
Yeah, they have, especially guys that have played in Italy, play in Italy or have played in Italy. They have Kwadwo Asamoah and Emmanuel Badu. Both of them played with Udinese.
Yeah.
And Asamoah moved to Juventus.
Sure.
They have Sully Muntari, who plays for Milan. They have Boateng, who played for Milan, Prince Boateng, who played for Milan and now in Schalke. And they have the Ayew brothers, Andre
Marseille,
and Andre and Jordan both play in Marseille and are the sons of Abidi Pele.
Well, the other thing too is I think people's notion is dismiss Guyan because he's now playing in the UAE. But the crazy thing is, and again, you know, the quality of UAE soccer is not the greatest, but he has 77 goals in 63 games.
Asamoah Gyan.
Yeah, and so based on those, if you take into account the quality of league, you would assume those numbers would equal a 15-20 goal scorer if he was in the EPL still. So he's still a top quality player, and I still think he'll be a key player for their success.
The other point I want to make about them is their coach, Kwasi Appiah, hopefully I said that right.
Yeah.
He, interestingly enough, and I could have this wrong, and you guys can correct me if I am wrong, but I believe he's the first black African coach to take Ghana to the World Cup. I know the other two they had were both Serbians or something.
Okay, yeah, in French, but, French guys.
And he wasn't their original choice to coach the team. They were actually targeting Marcel Desailly.
Oh, okay.
To coach the team, and he said he had other commitments, so they went with Appiah, who was coaching the youth teams and got moved up, and now has qualified them there.
So. Yeah, I think to be honest with you, I think most of the, if I'm correct, I think almost all the African teams have African-based coaches or a big percentage of them, which is I was just going to say it says a lot about African soccer. Is that the structure of those tournaments develop. Like a lot of the cases, like if you read old stories about previous World Cups, they would get a European-based coach, you would get players from a European-based team, and some of these guys had never even been in Africa or played in Africa before the tournament. So it's good to see that at least the structure in those countries are developing.
Yeah, for sure. The final team that we're going to talk about as part of the African group there is Algeria, and they're in Group H with Belgium, Russia, and South Korea. And I really don't have much to say on Algeria, to be honest.
Yeah, well, I think if you look at their group stage to get into the World Cup, I think they got the easier run compared to the other team. And I was going to say, you know, and I'm questioning it after saying this, is the one good thing about this World Cup is that the key countries from the areas that they're qualified in made it to the tournament. So there's less of these sort of flukes and more of these established countries and stuff. And Algeria certainly has a deep history in football. And part of that is they have their own domestic league that's quite successful. So a lot of these players are playing, a lot of their players on their team are playing in that domestic league. Although two guys who I will mention is Nabil Gillis, who hopefully that's how I pronounce it. He plays in Portugal. He was on loan to a smaller club in Portugal last year and was in the top 10 in scoring in Portuguese league. He's gone to Porto. It's taken him time to get into the first team, but now he's playing with Porto, and you know Porto's one of the big teams in Europe, and he has a lot of potential. He's a younger player, and then the only one is as you said earlier when you were talking about Ghana is midfielders playing in Italy, and Algeria and Italy have a close connection. So there is a number of players on the Algerian players who do play in Serie A. They don't get necessarily full-time minutes and stuff like that, but being in that training environment might, you know, help them make them key players for their team going through.
Yeah. So I think we'll leave that section there, but let us know your thoughts. You can tweet me directly at Kamal Hilton. Leave a comment underneath this post on the RNO site. Visit the Gaffer and Hooligan Facebook page, and you can finally find the podcast on the War Room Sports Podcast Network that launched on the 15th, and the last podcast covering CONCACAF and CONMEBOL is there, and this one will be there, and future ones will be there as well. But let's move on to the Asian region. We'll start off with looking at Australia, who is in Group B, and I feel sorry for them looking at this group. They're grouped with Spain, Netherlands, and Chile.
Yeah, I heard you mentioning them in the last podcast, and my I guess my answer is it's almost just dessert, because this is a very weak, in my opinion at least, this is a very weak Australian team. And one of the interesting things about World Cup and World Cup qualifications is a lot of the Asian qualification games took place 2 years ago. And so a lot of the key players on Australia's qualification to get them into this tournament, like Kuehl, like Neil, Schwarzer, Joshua Kennedy, have since retired from the national team. So one of the ironies, and again, you know, there could be other options and stuff, and there's certainly younger options, but one of the interesting things about Australia going to this tournament is their top striker is Tim Cahill, right? So this shows you in certain positions how much they're lacking. So yeah, I think they're going to struggle, but yeah, do you have any opinions on Australia?
I don't really have much to add except for their coaching situation.
Okay.
They've moved to Ange Postecoglou, who replaces Holger Osiek, who is familiar to Canadian fans. Osiek actually qualified the team for the World Cup, but he was fired after two friendly games against Brazil and France where they lost 6-0 apiece,
I think is
very harsh.
Yeah.
Because Australia's Australia, no offense to you guys, but getting beat by Brazil and France by 6-0 scorelines isn't anything to be ashamed of or even lose your job over.
Sure.
But the only other point I have here is one of their keepers, Mitchell Langerak, is on the books at Borussia Dortmund. I don't know if he'll figure into the team at all.
Okay, yeah, I was just going to say, you know, because we do, traditionally we do MLS podcasts, and the interesting thing, because there's this new generation coming into Australia, a lot of A-League players are going to actually probably be noticeable in this tournament. Another keeper, Matthew Ryan, who's now playing in Europe, was a top keeper in the A-League and one of the top prospects in the A-League. And this year they got Mitch Nichols and Adam Taggart, who are 20, 21, 22, I believe, and were stars in the A-League and have been getting offers in Asia and in Europe. And so it shows, at least it shows the development of that league. And as we talked about Japan and Korea, we'll see similar stories.
So, yeah, let's move on to Japan.
Okay.
And they're in Group C. They're grouped with Colombia, Greece, and Ivory Coast. My points on them really is they've gone with a foreign coach. They've gone with Alberto Zaccaroni, who's an experienced Italian manager, but this is really his first time at the helm of an international side. So it'll be interesting how he handles that. They have a big German Bundesliga influence, like you were saying before. Shinji Okazaki, Hiroshi Kiyotaki. They might possibly have Uchida and Takashi Inui, amongst others, on their team. All these guys are quality players. The one point, also, they're two stars. They have Keisuke Honda, who plays for Milan, and they have Shinji Kagawa, who
doesn't play for Manchester
United. Does not really play for Manchester United.
Well, and I guess that's one of my points. One of my points is well, I think two things. Number one is Japan is now a quality international side in all forms of soccer. And it says a lot about the J-League, again, giving promise to the MLS, where if you have a structured league, and you develop it properly, you can create great players through that league. My concern is because of the Kagawa is an interesting story where a German team bought him from Japan for like 70,000 euros and then sold him for 15 million, right? So because of that, a lot of Bundesliga teams are taking shots on young Japanese players, and a lot of them, or quite a few of them, are not getting time. And even though they're playing in Europe, they're not getting first team time. So it'll be interesting. Like, it'll be interesting how, you know, one argument, I guess you could say that at least they're going to be healthy, at least they're going to have energy. But it'll be interesting to see if Kagawa is impactful in this World Cup. And, you know, it does give the question is if all these guys were playing in the J-League and starring in the J-League and playing every week, does that say look more hope for them than being a part-time player in a Bundesliga side or in another side in Europe?
The game I'm really looking to in this group, looking forward to watching is Japan-Colombia.
I think
that's going to be a really fun game. Moving on to Iran, and I need to make an apology. Yes, and Iran is grouped in Group F with Argentina, Bosnia, and Nigeria. Now, my apologies to the Dejaga family. I had said Ashkan Dejaga was Algerian when
you're,
he hits
you're cause
Iranian.
A world war. You're going to cause a world war.
So I apologize there. You are a quality player. You will. You are probably Iran's best player, just yes. like I said you were Algeria's yes. best player. Yes. You are actually Iran's best player in my mind. And also the other point I would want to make on them is they are coached by Carlos Quiroz, who is okay. probably best known for being Sir Alex Ferguson's assistant at Manchester United.
And struggling in Portugal.
But do you have anything to add?
Well, yeah, I was going to mention Jay Jagow. There's a, and part of my Iranian, I guess. They have a guy named Gulshen Jinijahad, who I'm familiar with. I'm not maybe not sounding through the name. But he's another young prospect, so similar to the Jagow. And it's interesting because in a highlight package for EPL and Championship and the English Championship last week, both of them hit a wicked strike from 20 yards and stuff like that. It's one of those things, like I was mentioning with Ghana earlier, you want to dismiss them, but you can't dismiss them, right? Like one of the great things about the World Cup is that every team is bringing certain quality players to the tournament. My concern with them is the cultural. And, you know, this is no offense to Iran. And the what most people don't understand is Iranian soccer within Iran is crazy, right? Prolipolis, their top team, averages 90,000 fans per game. It's a huge sport there and stuff like that. But because of this, there's a huge split between players who play domestically in Iran and players who play elsewhere. And sometimes they take emphasis on the players who are playing in Iran, who might not be the better player. And the other concern is Prolipolis has struggled in the Iran Pro League the past few seasons, yet 12 of the players on the national team play for them. So you think there's some sort of, you know, buddy-buddy thing, some sort of deep connection that has a say over just the top quality of players. And I think, you know, I'll let you talk about this since, you know, you are an MLS expert, but your emphasis on Stephen Bulcher, who plays for Bellator, who plays for Vancouver Whitecaps, who's Iranian, and he could be on the team.
Interesting. I like Betashur. I'm not real. I've never seen him play for the Iranian national team, so I can't. And I don't know how Carlos Quiroz would use him. But in relation to how he plays in MLS, he's a good attacking fullback. I think he can put crosses in. And when he was with San Jose, he was one of their key players. And they didn't. I don't really think they wanted to lose him to Vancouver.
Yeah, they got salary cap issue.
Yeah, the nature of MLS. Let's move on to the final team in the Asian region, and that is South Korea. They're in Group H with Belgium, Algeria, and Russia. And the points that I have to make about them is their coach, Han Myung-bo, he is a disciple of such coaches as Dick Advocaat, Pim Verbeek, and Gus Hiddink. So that kind of bodes well for it. I think how South Korea plays, how they have developed, particularly Gus Hiddink link, because he's probably, he is a god there pretty much for doing what he did there, qualifying them.
Well, the interesting thing too, and I'll announce it to the world if you haven't, as a Gooner, is that their top player by far in the qualification was Chu Ying Park, who was brought in by Wenger a couple of years ago into Arsenal and has been everywhere since. But I think he's still an Arsenal player.
Yeah, he's still on our books, but I mean...
So you probably have more awareness of him than most people. But he scored eight goals in the qualification round. It was basically their key. Korea is another country that's going through a transition phase, where Jisung Park and Young Poi Lee are pretty much, I think they're retired now. And then they have Lee Dong-guk, who's the top striker, played in Germany, is still the top striker, even though he's like 35 years old, in the K-League. But they're going away from that and trying these more younger players and stuff like that. So I think, you know, it wouldn't surprise me if Korea is one of the youngest teams going into this tournament. And the other benefit they have is a lot of their key players, especially in the midfield, Sunderland's key, Sun and Ji, who play both in Bundesliga, they're in that 24-25 age range, which is basically when players reach their peak. So, and you know, from games that I've seen in South Korea, or see South Korea play, is they love to run with the ball, they have a huge amount of energy. And so if they're in better shape than their opponents in the tournament, they could surprise teams.
Yeah, your point on Park Chu Young, I liked him when he was on Monaco.
Yeah.
And I guess Wenger liked him when he was on Monaco.
Sure.
And I guess his game, I don't know if his game might just not translate to how we want to do things, or he was just bought as depth. I have no, it's the same thing when we had Shamak, but that's a whole other discussion.
Well, I think the one thing is, and if you get a chance to, you know, I don't think many people do, and the games are at 4 in the morning, but watch a K-League game. Because you've never seen people just run up the field as much as in a Korean league, right? And I think that sort of relates to, and you know, I think you mentioned this earlier with the Dick Advocaat, is you know, their Asian Holland, right? They try to emphasize Dutch style of play, no formation, just everybody running with the ball. They use the wings very well, and that's why Lee was very good at with the Whitecaps. And so, you know, they're an exciting team to watch. And so maybe Park fits in that system better than he fits in a system where he's not the main emphasis. Like, the interesting thing is one of the stats I do is for the qualification things. And he sort of, you know, in terms of South Korea making the World Cup, he dominated statistically. He had the most goals, but he also had twice as many shots as anybody on the team. And so maybe because he's the key guy, that's what allowed him to excel.
Yeah, just to kind of wrap this up here, I do agree with you on Son Heung-min.
Yeah.
Who was, I think, was an absolute stud for Hamburg, and he's moved to Leverkusen and continued his form there. Yeah, Ji Dong-won, I believe he was on Sunderland's books and didn't really do so well.
Yeah.
But it took him moving to Germany and playing for Augsburg, I believe.
Well, the other thing is Key, who plays for Sunderland. You know, it's funny because, you know, Sunderland's not a great team, but if anybody's watched EPL this year, when Sunderland has scored the fluky goal or got back into a game, he's the guy who does this. And South Korea always has the famous stories when they knocked out Italy. And that's the style of play that they were playing, right? It was just their, you know, their ability to surprise, the ability to counter, and the ability to score a goal when you needed it.
Yeah, also Lee Chung-young, who plays for Bolton.
Yeah.
He was really good when Bolton was in the Premier League. I remember that. Really well.
He's still good in the championship.
I don't watch Bolton, so I haven't seen him. But I'm assuming
the interesting story, just since we brought him up, the interesting story about him is he had when they got relegated the first season in championship, he had some knee injury, and so he actually missed the whole season. And a lot of people thought, you know, Stuart Holden, who's a player for USA, who has a similar story, a lot of people thought his career was over. And he's come back this year, and he's been a key player now. Now, the problem is Bolton sold off all their other key players, so they're not as strong as they used to be. But, yeah, I think, you know, just because you're in the championship, it says a lot, again, to the tournament. Just because you're playing domestically or in the championship or something, it doesn't mean you're a worse player than an EPL player. It's just your circumstances that you're playing in.
And the last player I'd mention is Cardiff's Kim Bo-hyun.
Yeah.
I think he plays in like defensive midfield-ish position. I think he's been one of their better players this season. I think we'll end the podcast here, but let us know your thoughts. You can tweet me directly at Kamal Hilton. Leave a comment underneath this post on the RNO site. Also visit the Gaffer and Hooligan Facebook page and find the podcast on the War Room Sports Podcast Network. Before we go, do you have anything to plug?
No. Well, I'm still doing work on Red Nation Online. We're doing as far away as the World Cup as possible. We're putting more emphasis on the team players being loaned out to USL Pro and the NASL, Ottawa and Edmonton starting off their season. So we're going to try to do some more work with that. And we might do some World Cup stuff as well.
And where can people find you on Twitter?
My Twitter account's EMB Sports.
Okay. And before we go, be sure to check out our other brands within the RNO family of podcasts. Eastside Stand Up with Ian Clark has you covered for all things TFC. Steve Botcher provides the RNO interview series with key Canadian figures within the game. The boys from the Black Hole, Rob, Jeff, and Lars, bring their unique style of coverage to Canadian soccer. And the newest addition to the podcast family is Ours is the Fury, covering everything you need to know on the newest NASL franchise. Until next time, cheers.
Cheers.